invitation. I'm a little bit confused by, and maybe other people also, by affiliations. There was written who I am not, but there are two things who I am. And also, there are two talks with the same title of me and Alexander Boychev, so I asked Sasha whether he has the results of what on this topic I will be talking about, and he said just wait, so we will see. Alright, so the question I will be considering is the result of oversimplification of a certain problem which I knew from my years in Leningrad. That was the problem which Nikolai Makarov wanted to solve. And you can reformulate this problem of Makarov, which was actually asked by Nikolsky, by a certain equation about Cauchy transform. So now we know lots of things about Cauchy transform of measures after all these great breakthroughs by Guy David and Xavier Tolsa and Mark Melnikov and Imodus, let me mention Nazareth Trail Volberg. So looks like it's a time to solve the equation involved Cauchy transforms. But we couldn't solve this equation, which Makarov and Nikolsky needs. And the equation, I even don't want to write it down because I want to write down the equation which we simplify. And here is the equation which we try to solve. We means Mark Melnikov. Alexei Poltoratsky. Poltoratsky. And myself. And the equation is the following. So how to solve this equation? So C mu is a Cauchy transform, which means measure mu, let it be a positive measure with compact support on the plane. So we get this function, which is very nice. It's analytic outside of the support with this complex set. How else it is defined? It's very easy to see that this function not only defined as an analytic function outside of the support, but it's also defined kind of point-wisely as in the sense that in sense of Lebesgue measure, that this is Lebesgue measure, dx dy. So it is defined almost everywhere on the complex plane with respect to this thing. It's also very easy to see. In what sense we ask it to be equal to zero? Of course, everybody knows all kind of trivial results that if you know that C mu is equal to zero on an open set, for example, it is dx dy almost everywhere defined, and an open set supposed to be equal to zero, then trivially mu on this open set is zero. But what we want to consider is a different, sometimes different type of wow. Yeah, well, that's not interesting. What we want, that it's zero on the support of mu. So we want that it be equal mu almost everywhere. So in this, in which sense? Because Cauchy transform is really very badly defined in terms of mu itself. So in what sense? In the following sense. You can see the principal value of the Cauchy transform, which is the limit epsilon goes to zero integrals that are such that you assume that limits exist. So saying that, you are saying two things. First, limit exists almost everywhere. And secondly, it is equal to zero, mu almost everywhere. So we ask two things. I'm almost sure that it's a problem. So if you just ask, what are measures such that this exists almost everywhere? Description of such measures can be extremely difficult. Some papers of Stolz are close to that, but I think they are not exactly about this question. So that's one open question. But if we assume two things, then very naturally to assume that the result is only mu for positive measure, that mu is equal to zero, that there is a uniqueness. Well, let me give you the proof of that, and you should find the mistake. So you just write the following seemingly trivial quality. So first of all, what does it mean here? So this I can consider as a new measure. Now, I already told you that if C mu is equal to zero on the open set, then mu of, on this open set is zero. And why is that? It just follows from a trivial remark that d bar of C mu is mu up to a constant, maybe pi or something like that. So to prove this thing, let me just take d bar of both parts and then see that they are both analytic functions at infinity, zero at infinity. And so if d bar coincide, then function must coincide. So let's take d bar here. By chain rule, it's 2, c mu of z, then d bar c mu. And it's left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, it's 2. C mu d mu. Now, I already said that d bar of C mu is mu, so we get the same thing in both parts. So they have the same d bar, and so they should be equal. But then if C mu is equal to zero, mu almost everywhere, this thing is zero here. But then this thing is zero. So we have the function such that its square is zero, so the function must be zero, and then mu must be zero. So I prove this thing. So where is the mistake? Yeah, to see that there should be a mistake, here is a measure which will satisfy this property. So we can see the measure mu naught. So this is this thing on minus 1, 1 and 0 outside. And then we consider the Cauchy transform. Z is outside of minus 1, 1 segment. And it's really not very difficult to make this computation and see that outside of minus 1, 1, this is just up to a constant, which I don't remember. It's an analytic function which is written here, and let us compute anti-jump of this analytic function. So what does it mean, anti-jump? When you have a Cauchy transform, you usually compute jump. You have limit from above, limit from below, and you take the subtract them, and it becomes almost everywhere the density of the measure. But let's compute anti-jump, so phi x plus I epsilon plus phi x minus I epsilon. Well, actually, this is the principal value of this thing. This is what we are looking for. This is the principal value of Cauchy integral of mu naught. But you can see that going from this direction, going from that direction, just change the sign of this function. So the sum is zero. So here is the example of the measure which satisfies non-uniqueness. Actually, let me immediately formulate the theorem. So let E be any compact set on the line, and let us consider a measure which is a harmonic measure of C minus E. Sometimes it doesn't exist, but suppose this E, for example, has positive length. And suppose also one more assumption, that measure, harmonic measure, is absolutely continuous with respect to the back measure. So you consider any complicated counterset on the plane and consider harmonic measure evaluated at infinity of C minus E. So then this measure is like that. So let us call such measures reflectionless. I will explain later why this name comes from mathematical physics, where they are, first of all, appeared, such measures. And so we have plenty of reflectionless. So, okay, the mistake here is that you can take d bar derivative of a distribution, and this guy is not necessarily a distribution. So that's the problem here. However, this proof is correct under one additional assumption. So let me formulate kind of, maybe this is theorem one, theorem two. Suppose we know a little bit more about measure. We know that maximal singular operator of this measure, which is, instead of limit, you take supremum. So it's a sort of principal value which exists always, because you take supremum, not limit. I suppose this thing belongs to L1 mu. Then you can prove that this is a distribution. Then proof goes on. So the result is that in this case, C nu equals mu. Mu almost everywhere means mu is zero. Yes. Okay, so we have some results in both directions. We know some reflectionless measures, and we know that under certain conditions they are only zero measures. And let me tell you, in this example, mu zero, you, of course, you can compute all these guys for mu zero, and C mu zero star, of course, is not an L1. Mu zero, otherwise we would have a contradiction, but it's in L1 weak. So it's really very tight. That condition is practically very sharp. So we have the definition of reflectionless measures, and for the sake of the talk, I want a little bit different definition of weakly reflectionless measures. So this concerns only measures with support on the line. And it's called weakly reflectionless if C mu is equal to zero. But instead of saying mu almost everywhere, I will say dx almost everywhere. So for measures absolutely continuous with respect to the Lebesgue measure, it's the same definition. But for measures which are not absolutely continuous, which have singular part with respect to the Lebesgue measure, that's a weaker definition. So immediately, this definition allows us to have a nice form of this theorem 1. Theorem 1, which nobody can see. Theorem 1 says that all harmonic measures are reflectionless if harmonic measure is absolutely continuous with respect to the Lebesgue measure. And this last thing seems kind of strange here. And it is strange because here is a theorem 1 prime. It says that, again, you have E, R, you consider C minus E, you get harmonic measure. Now you don't care whether it's absolutely continuous or not. Just any harmonic measure is weakly reflectionless. One may ask, well, at least on the line, can you describe reflectionless or weakly reflectionless measures? Can it be given? Yes? It's harmonic measure with respect to domain C minus E. So the picture is like that. Here is E, and the rest is C minus E. So it's a very large domain. So harmonic measure really can be not absolutely continuous with respect to the Lebesgue measure. And such cases vary. You just take counter set which has zero length, for example, and the harmonic measure. I mean, harmonic measure is harmonic measure. If you have a domain, you immediately have harmonic measure. Yeah, two-dimensional, of course. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I raised this theorem one prime. Well, anyway, so. So how this measures appeared on the line? On the line, they appeared from the following theory of almost periodic Jacobian matrix. So Jacobi matrix is just infinite matrix, which will be the operator from L2 to L2, which looks like that. You have a certain sequence of numbers on diagonal in both directions. It's on Z. So let's call them Qn. And then you have two other diagonals on which you have the same sequence, Pn, Pn. Everything is real. Everything is bounded. And everywhere else you have zeros. So if you have Pn's identically equal to 1, this is the model of discrete Schrödinger operator, because it will be just second differentiation, and this is a potential. But with Jacobian matrices, we often consider more general cases. What does mean almost periodic? Almost periodic means that Pn and Qn are actually functions on some commutative group. So you have P n plus P beta plus n alpha. So this is the element of commutative group. This is the element of commutative group. P is a continuous function on commutative group, and so you have this here and the same here. So in this case, it's called almost periodic. And it has been noticed that if you have Jacobi matrix, which is almost periodic, and then you consider the following analytic function, so Z is so first of all, spectrum is some compact subset of the real line, and if you consider such resolvent, it's analytic function outside of the spectrum. This analytic function always has positive imaginary part, so it will be the integral of positive measure on the spectrum. And it has been noticed by the theory of Catani and Pastor that the measure you get here is reflectionless. So it will have this property that as I formulated. And actually, E naught, this element of L2, it doesn't matter here. You can put any. And all these measures will be reflectionless. And actually, it's sufficient to say that two of them are reflectionless, and then automatically all others will be reflectionless. So a very natural question is the following. So almost periodic gives you reflectionless measures. Can you invert this thing? So given J, and given that all this mu k are reflectionless, does it mean that J is almost periodic? And here there was a very interesting result of Sodin and Yuditsky. So they prove the following, that if so in general, of course, this shouldn't be correct, but if you have some conditions on the spectrum, it turns out that it's correct. So if the spectrum of J, so let's call it E, is homogeneous, then reflectionless. Reflectionlessness implies almost periodicity. Now, homogeneous spectrum. What does it mean, homogeneous spectrum? Homogeneous spectrum is a localization of minus 1, 1. So what is so special about minus 1, 1? It's solid. And homogeneous spectrum just means that it's like that. But if you intersect it with any interval centered at E, then the portion is bigger than constant times the length of this interval. Okay. So this is kind of so if you, for example, ask, what are reflectionless measures with support on minus 1, 1? But what you mean by support on minus 1, 1? You mean that it doesn't have a hole on minus 1, 1. So it means it's support on minus 1, 1. It's not supported on minus 1 to 3 quarters, and then from 9 eighths to 1. There is no hole. So if there is no hole, then the only reflectionless measure is the constant multiple of what we have. And this reflectionless measure is the spectral measure of the simplest possible operator, which will have zeros here and ones here. And this is this is of course almost periodic. So this theorem is a generalization of that. If you have spectrum more complicated than minus 1, 1, but still having something from minus 1, 1, that it's kind of solid, then any operator with the reflectionless measures will be almost periodic. And I would like to ask you to be amazed, because it means that you have to construct a compact abelian group and continuous functions and alphas, betas. So where is compact abelian group here? Well, that's the picture. That's the spectrum. Where is compact abelian group? And so it's a very interesting result in the functional analysis. But underlying this result was a result in HAD analysis. So, and the result in HAD analysis is the following, as you can expect. It should, such results should have some underlying HAD analysis result. So, theorem was the following, that if you have E, which is homogeneous, and you have measure on E, such that it is weakly reflectionless, then mu is absolutely continuous with respect to Lebesgue measure on E. So from the fact, it's a sort of, if you want to look for analogies, it's a sort of theorem of Brothers Ries, right? If you have a measure which is on this unit circle, which is orthogonal to 1, z, z squared, etc., then it should be absolutely continuous. And here you have a measure which has this strange property that anti-jump is 0. So 0 there, 0 here. If anti-jump is 0, dx almost everywhere on E, then it cannot have a singular component. It should be absolutely continuous. So on homogeneous sets, weakly reflectionless and reflectionless measures are the same. And whose theorem was that? Well, that's a little bit difficult to say. That not they refer to this theorem. I think I think partially it was Peter Jones. I know there are several authors, but I can give the reference to Michel Zinsmeister. So it's a really subtle fact from harmonic analysis. So it can be even formulated in terms of H1 and Carlson measures and things like that. So it basically says that if you have a homogeneous set and the function which is H1 in C minus E, it will be in usual H1 in the half plane. So now a couple of natural questions persist. So what are these natural questions? So first of all, can one make weaker the assumption of homogeneity of spectrum? So, if you analyze the proof of Yuditsky and Sodin, you see that it's based on this hard analysis fact, which I stated, and also it is based on another interesting thing. It's a theory of so-called Widom domains. So what does it mean, Widom domain? So this theory of Widom domains is kind of necessary to construct this abelian group and this function. So if you have infinitely connected domain, as is our natural realm now, then you have so-called modulus of automorphic function. It means that these are holomorphic functions, but they are not single valued. So if you go around the loop, you don't come back to F. But the absolute value of f will be preserved. So if you go around the loop, you multiply by a certain number of absolute value 1, which depends on the loop, and which of course is a which is the map of the fundamental group into the unit circle. So each function of this type carries out a character of the fundamental group. And Widom answered the following questions. What are the characterization of domains such that every such function gives a character. So what is the characterization of domains such that every character is given by a function? So for every character of the fundamental group, one needs to find bounded function in C minus E, which has modulus which is preserved, but which gives you this character when you go around the loops of the fundamental group. And the answer was the following. So Widom characterized such domains. So domain C minus E is of this sort if and only if it is a Widom domain. And it means that if you consider the green function of C minus E, so C minus E is sort of countersed, but for simplicity. So if you consider the green function, so the green function is positive in the complement, so it should look like that on complementary intervals of E. And then you take this maximum. So these are critical points of the green function. And these are critical values. The value of this maximum is a critical value. So then you sum up these critical values. And if it's finite, that's necessary and sufficient condition. And Widom also noticed that homogeneous are always Widom. And of course, it's very easy to see that the other way around is not true. But as I said, two ingredients in this proof of Sodin-Yuditsky that almost periodicity is the same as reflectionlessness is two things, this Zinsmeister thing and Widom domains. So Widom domains is slightly wider type of domains, family of domains than homogeneous. So the natural question, can one prove number one if you have not homogeneous spectrum, but Widom spectrum? So can Zinsmeister since Meister's theorem be proved for Widom spectrum. Okay, and actually I'm going to show that no, it cannot. So as soon as you forget homogeneity, you can have reflectionless measures with this support, with point masses, and then with singular continuous components. And examples will be not very difficult. But first of all, as I promised to formulate all the questions which I want to answer, which we want to answer, here is another question. We have all these examples of reflectionless measures. It seems like they are only on the line. Harmonic measures, etc. But actually, we also have some examples which are not on the line. But they also come from harmonic measures. And harmonic measures, as the theory of Makarov, Jones, and Wolf says, if you have any subset of the complex plane, compact one, and harmonic measure on E, then dimension of harmonic measure is less or equal than 1. So the part when E is connected is Makarov, and then it's equal to 1. And for arbitrary E, it is Jones and Wolf, and is extremely difficult, super difficult. It's one of the most difficult results in analysis of the 20th century. So, as I said, all our examples come from either harmonic measures or something like harmonic measures. And so automatically, they all have dimension 1. So all reflectionless measures we know have dimension 1. So this brings the natural conjecture that if it's reflectionless, it should have dimension 1, or at least less or equal. And what we know here about this? So what you should prove to prove this? You should prove the following, that for any epsilon bigger than 0, and if mu is a reflectionless measure, then mu is singular with respect to Hausdorff measure 1 plus epsilon on the plane. So that support tends to be thin. It wants to go closer and closer to kind of support 1. And this is exactly what was proved here. Now, this is the result with Melnikov and Polteratsky. What we can prove that reflectionless measure is singular with respect to H2, which is Lebesgue measure. So even not H2 minus delta, which would be already very nice. So the question, just to bite out a small positive delta. Most of what I'm saying is on the archive, except this, which I will cite now. It's with Fedya Nazarov. So we prove that mu is singular with respect to H. Now I should write the gauge function as Sergei did. So it should be t squared logarithm 1 over t 1 quarter. So we can bite out a logarithmic thing a little bit, but so which indicates that maybe we are right, that reflectionless measures really should have a thin support. Now, let me elaborate a little bit about this theorem with Polterabsky and Melnikov. So what is the difficulty? What actually? And then maybe I will say a couple of words about the examples. So what you have to do? You should take measure mu. Now you should write it as follows. It has some density with respect to some Radon-Nikodym derivative with respect to the Lebesgue measure, plus maybe some singular part, singular with respect to the Lebesgue measure. And what do you know about this? You know that this thing. Well, let's fix that W is, well, actually it's everywhere zero except a small place where it's positive. Everything is positive, as you know here. And this set where it's positive, let's call it E, and it's Borel set of positive Lebesgue measure. Now suppose you have this W dx dy plus mu s zeta minus z. And suppose that this is zero, well, exactly on E. Dx dy almost everywhere on E. So you want to conclude that actually W is zero. So let's even make it even simpler. Let's forget about this singular part. You just have L1 function, positive on some Borel set. You take its Cauchy transform, and you know that Cauchy transform is dx dy zero almost everywhere on this set of positive measure. So the only thing you need to prove is kind of a triviality that W is zero. It should be absolutely trivial. And it is if E is an open set. So if everything is in the open set, you have the Cauchy transform which is zero on the open set. But then it means that measure is zero on this open set. So W will be zero. So it's not an open set. You cannot take d bar like that in Borel sets, right? D bar is always related to some Bell-like function, and Bell-like function lives on open sets, not on Borel sets. And the annoying thing that it becomes completely trivial if W is not from L1, but slightly better than from L1. Because then we can forget about the fact that it's zero, let's call it phi of z, and then obviously this phi of z is a function from Sobolev class, one derivative in L1 plus delta. And if you have a function in the Sobolev class, you kind of can honestly differentiate it, not at every point, but at almost every point. You can write like in calculus, derivative, and it will exist almost everywhere, etc., etc. But on the other hand, function is zero on E. So if here is awful E, so we cross it like that. For almost every line, we can differentiate. Function is zero, derivative is zero, we can differentiate in this direction, function is zero, derivative is zero. But d bar derivative is a combination of dx and dy. So d bar will be also almost everywhere 0, and we get the w is 0. And all is from the general nonsense that Sobolev functions can be differentiated, like normal functions. But if you have only this, you don't have that. Because if you have w from L1, and you compute d bar derivative of phi, it's from L1. Fine. But you need another derivative. You need d derivative of phi. And d derivative of phi is a single Calderon-Zygmund operator of w. So this is Calderon-Zygmund kernel, and it doesn't map L1 to L1. So you don't have this. So you cannot operate like before. And it's, for me, it was quite amazing that even though you cannot go through all that, uniqueness theorem is correct. Moreover, so if you have any measure mu positive on the plane, and Cauchy transform of mu is 0, I am 2 almost everywhere on a set, let's call it E tilde, then Radon-Nikodym derivative of this measure on E tilde doesn't exist. So which, in other words of saying what I said is to say that if we have this, another way to formulate it is that mu, well, corollary of this is that mu is singular with respect to the Lebesgue measure. Okay, so now maybe I will try to explain fast this example, and maybe very fast the proof of that. By the way, so some other people got interested in this question, and there is a paper of Tolsa and Verdera about reflectionless measures, which kind of follows from us, but they were before us. And I think what we had is much stronger. But for example, this result that if you have a Cauchy transform of L1 function, and it's zero on the support of this W, then W is zero, is in this paper. But we have completely different proof, which is much shorter. And that was a question which Mark and I asked Tulsa and John. So a little bit about this example. So how we construct reflectionless measures with singular, quickly reflectionless measures with singular parts. So let's do the following construction. So this is the interval segment, and then we start to delete A1, B1, A2, B2 in some order. And let us write the following function. So we have infinitely many gaps, A1, B1, A2, B2, etc. And we have this infinite product where everything is defined except xj. Xj is, can be any point in this interval, in interval aj, bj, including the endpoints. And so we have a family of functions. It turns out that all these functions have positive imaginary part, and so they will be Cauchy integral of positive measures. Support of these measures will be outside of gaps, so it will be on what is left. What is left, let's call E. So B naught, A naught, minus AJ, BJ. This is E. And this measure, you can ask, can we see this measure? And the funny answer is that you can see its Radon-Nikodym derivative with respect to Lebesgue measure. So to see its Radon-Nikodym derivative, you just make Z real. And then this formula will give you the Radon-Nikodym derivative. But it doesn't give you the singular part. You cannot see the singular part of this measure. You don't see whether it exists or not. And let's see how we can detect a singular measure. We'll make some formal things with that. So if you consider this new function, it also has positive imaginary part, strangely enough, in the upper half plane. And so if you consider this thing and take logarithm, it will be well defined in the upper half plane and everything. And let us call it minus g of z. Why minus g of z? Because g of z will be between 0 and pi. Well, all this is easy to... The one which you... The most... Yes, of course, yeah. So we'll have such formula with certain g, which is in the upper half plane, is between 0 and pi. And... actually, if we go to the boundary, it will be pi on these black pieces, not on the gaps, but on the complement, on E. And so you can write that R of Z is some minus, oh, sorry, 1 over Z minus B naught E minus G of Z, and you detect a singular piece. So if you do something with this such that it doesn't kill that, you have a singular measure here, just a point mass. Right? Because this measure will have a point mass. What is the condition that this should not kill that? It means that G will not kill this, but G is computable. I said that it's when we go to the boundary, it becomes 0 on gaps and pi on slits. And so the condition having a singular measure is just that integral of constant function on E computed at B naught is finite. Because it's exactly the value of G at B naught. Not finite. Yes, finite. Finite because then this is not zero. If this is finite, then this is not zero. So it doesn't kill, and we have a singular piece. Now this singular piece should be reconciled with Widomness. So how to reconcile this with Widomness? So what does it mean that this integral converges? It means that these gaps are large with respect to slits. But this goes against Widomness. because you need to have this sum up of this Green's function, you need small gaps, and here you have big gaps and small slits. And so what you are doing, so you take the following observation that that if you have such a picture so this will be my future slit. This will be my future slit. And what is important here that the ratio of this to this. This ratio should be very close to 1. Because being very close to 1, it will give me that ratio of this to this is very close to 0. And then I will sum up my integral. So this should be very close to 1. But it turns out that it's okay. If you move now this picture very, very close, you can still have that independently of what you have before in your past. You can move this very close to this point B naught in such a way that harmonic measure of this thing with respect to everything which you have before is sufficiently large. So playing with this harmonic measure, you can get as long gaps as you can, but also guarantee that this condition is satisfied. And so that's basically the idea of the proof here, and one can construct this point mass for the reflectionless measure. And doing approximately the same thing, we can do singular continuous path. And I think I should stop without explaining, say, this theorem, but it's actually, you can find it in the archive of the proof. Yes, it does. Well, I mean, yeah, this corresponds to Jacobian of what they call Jacobian, and yeah, it. You mean how to construct concrete realization by that? I think. No, they have this theory of Jacobians, and not Jacobian matrix, but Jacobians, and I guess yes, it does correspond, but I am not very good at that. Yeah. Yes, so another result of Tolstoy and Verderi was that if curvature of measure is finite, then reflectionless means uniqueness. But it, what is formulated here is the same as C mu star in L2 mu means uniqueness. And we have this, we have slightly better.
Coffee break now.